Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
It doesn't happen very often, but this week we have a chance to enjoy an all-praise ceremony, Guy-a-luya. First, for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation's recent adoption of an official policy discouraging the use of words terrorist attack for the September 11th incident 25 years ago. As CBC Public Affairs Director Carrie Kelly, she/her, explained, it is the practice of the CBC to exercise extreme caution before using the words terrorist and terrorism. Well said, eh? As the internal memo to all staff said, do not refer to the September 11th attacks as terrorist attacks. Rather, reporters should refer to the events as, quote, hijackings that led to passenger jet crashes. But don't call it terrorism. There's just so much to praise here. First of all, the CBC has clearly now internalized what we've been saying for decades. One non-gender-specific person's terrorist is another non-gender-specific person's freedom fighter. And since referring to the Quran-based freedom fighters who liberated control of the jetliners that day from the imperialist pilots as terrorists, or even hijackers, is prejudicial to the legitimacy of their political goals, we should refrain from using such language. As you well know, the 19 enhanced community organizers who orchestrated the airplane-based protest were motivated by the fact that America is the great Satan and deserves to be attacked for all the evil it's done here and abroad. We, of course, totally agree, believing that America is a sexist, racist, homophobic land of systemic hatred and oppression. Obviously, we realize that the mostly peaceful Muslims of 9/11 were themselves racist, sexist, homophobes, but they hate America almost as much as we do. So, the enemy of my enemy becomes my friend. As a result, it is important not to inappropriately frame their political demonstration that unalived 3,000 people as terrorism, since that might make people not take their objectives seriously. Also, since we know Muslims are basically harmless, a fact confirmed by the total lack of bloodshed in their history, anything that provokes them to actual violence must certainly have been the fault of the people they killed. But since we are talking about the politically correct way to relabel a major homicide incident, note, I did not call it mass murder, perhaps it's time to change the way we describe other historical events that have been inappropriately labeled as terrorism. The Olympic Village killings of 1972, often called the Munich Massacre, can now be called the Munich Manslaughter, or maybe the Palestinian protest homicides. Pearl Harbor can be relabeled as the preemptive Japanese unalivings of 1941. The Oklahoma City bombing could be described as Timothy McVeigh conducting a vigorous redress of grievances against the federal government. And the first and second Palestinian intifadas can just be called the periods of accelerated Jewish population adjustment, similar to how we might describe what took place in Germany in the 1940s. You see, it's very easy to find neutral language to underdescribe major atrocities so that people can draw their own conclusions about whether the mass life shortening of innocent people is a legitimate political tactic or not. Far be it from the CBC or anyone else to cast aspersions on the legitimacy of anyone's political cause or tactics by, you know, accurately labeling them. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, let's discuss Lake America. Now, I know this one's going to be a little hard to hear since this whole episode was the pure invention of President He Who Shall Never Be Named. Nevertheless, let's recognize that even though he appears to be working against our interests in general, the name changing first of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America and now of Lake Ontario to Lake America shows that President Nope is actually working inadvertently on our side. As you know, he's only renamed a few things, the Department of War, Mount McKinley, Fort Bragg, etc., whereas we have accomplished hundreds of renamings with our efforts over the years. But precisely because he is willing to do name changes, he has granted the entire project of right naming full legitimacy. Plus, by exposing his own supporters as hypocrites for standing against the renaming of the Redskins, the Indians, Aunt Jemima, and Uncle Ben, for instance, but then siding with him for the very silly Americanization of the Gulf and the Lake, he's actually done us a favor. We never again need to take seriously those heretics who think changing names is not a valid practice or, as we consider it, a holy sacrament. They embraced the president's weird hydronyms, and now they're stuck accepting all of the name shifts that we bring as well. So even though it's ridiculous to make these particular and petty label changes, as long as Orange Man is normalizing the changing of names, he's advocating our cause. Besides, We can always undo this later, further contributing to both referential confusion and the pervasive geographic ignorance of American students who must surely have no idea what anything is actually named anymore right now. However, you should be prepared that President No Way We Say It is going to bring forward more name changes. Here are some we expect. Canadian whiskey will probably become American whiskey, even if it's made in Canada. Canadian geese will become Donald Ducks. Canadian bacon will simply become ham, or perhaps ham of America. We actually do expect he'll change Atlantic and Pacific Oceans to American Ocean East and American Ocean West. Tacos, enchiladas, empanadas, and burritos will soon be called simply American Cooking South. Not to be confused with Southern cooking, obviously. Lake Erie and Lake Huron will probably become Lake America 2 and Lake America 3. Lake Michigan might stay, but certainly Lake Superior will become Lake Bigliest or Lake Huge. And since the Spanish refused to cooperate with his outrageous war against Iran, parts of Florida will soon be required to say that their trees are covered with American moss. In any case, you get the point. Lots of changes are coming, but we can reverse them all with the next presidency. And for now, rejoice with us in Lake America's new identity. For Gaia's sake, stop dead-naming her as Lake Ontario. She has transitioned, and we wholeheartedly celebrate the changing of things for the sake of changing things. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, this week's patchouli oil-rubbed cedarwood tambourine of justice with Mylar synthetic drumhead, obviously not animal skin, three tassels, goes to the fine thought leaders at Pringles for their transparent lid-shattering invention of Pringles dippers. Yes, after 58 years of frustration anytime we tried to use what Procter & Gamble originally marketed as Pringles newfangled potato chips in 1968, to pick up some salsa or French onion dip or nacho cheese sauce, what was the end result? Disappointed taste buds, thwarted life goals, and a Humpty Dumpty-like crime scene of shattered Pringles shards laying impotently in whatever dip you had intended to pick up with them when they were still intact. As everyone knows, you just can't dip a Pringle. But now the foodtrepreneurs at Mars have done something spectacular. They've created a new treat which is slightly thicker than the original Pringle, has light corrugation for structural enhancement, and comes in three flavors. Now, I know you might be asking yourself, what sort of a loon would ever even want to use dip on a Pringle since the snacks are perfect as is and in no need of adornment? How dare you criticize someone else's lifestyle choices? Have you learned nothing from us all these years? We are an inclusive congregation here, ladies and gentlemen and neithers. But just think of how delightfully this innovation smudges the distinctions between existing types of food. These new snacks with the look of corduroy knee patches made of potatoes instead of cotton aren't really like ridged potato chips, and they aren't really like Pringles either. They're something entirely new. They're confusing, they're unusual, and they're weird. They're transchipular. Depending on your view, they're either Ruffles that identify as Pringles or Pringles that identify as Ruffles, but either way, they're most definitely non-binary. You might even say they are potato fluid, sitting quite comfortably in the conceptual gray space between being identified chip at birth and being identified Pringle at birth. And for challenging potato norms and breaking down the walls of those little foil-lined cylinder sleeves, literally the separate but equal silos of the snack world, we are thrilled. Of course, you realize that Pringles themselves have for over a decade been the official potato snack of the people of the Holy Acronym String. Not because of their flavor or texture or compulsive edibility, but because they refuse traditional labels, just like we do. Pringles aren't potato chips, despite the original marketing push. Rather than being fried slices of any potato, Pringles are technically an extruded snack made into a saddle-shaped delicacy from a starchy seasoned potato mash. Their very existence challenges the French fry or chip potato snack binary. If you were to start with an uncooked gnocchi, press it into a curve and flash fry it, that'd be a Pringle. Certainly neither chip nor fry. So for historically thwarting the man-made boundaries of artificially imposed food categories, we have always celebrated Pringles, which have now officially become the theyest of all chips. A protrusion here, an indentation there, both thicker in one sense and thinner in another, and all with that completely unique texture and taste. An individual, identical to all the other individuals in the sleeve, just like the letters of the Holy Acronym String. Different, but very, very same. Well done, Pringles. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal, and go forth and transgress no more.